Welcome to Churches Planting Churches, a podcast on the theology and practice of church planting. I'm your host, Tony Marita. Paul and Barnabas' first missionary journey in Acts 13 and 14 provides us with an inspiring model of perseverance in the work of making disciples and planting churches. Numerous sacrifices are made on this journey, and at the end of the trip, Paul is nearly stoned to death by his persecutors. But Paul gets up and keeps going. He then tells the saints, "Through many tribulations, we must enter the kingdom of God." Church planting, like all true gospel ministry, will involve suffering. This does not mean everyone will suffer to the same degree or extent, but suffering in some form will come. This is not only true of Christian ministry, it's true of the Christian life. Paul told Timothy that all who desire to live a godly life in Christ Jesus will be persecuted. It doesn't get much clearer than that. As church planting pastors, we will not only experience our own suffering, but we will also be responsible to shepherd the flock through their suffering. How do we do this well? What does it look like to endure suffering and shepherd others who are suffering? Today, I'm excited to have Philip Moore with me on the podcast to talk about suffering and church planting. Philip is married to Rachel and they have five children. In 2006, Philip moved to France to pastor a church in the Paris area. Since then, by God's grace, the church has planted three daughter churches and trained and sent a couple to plant a church in the center of Paris. He is now the Acts 29 Network Director for Europe. Philip, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Always good to be with Philip Moore, one of my favorite people in the world. Philip and I have had the privilege of teaching in Ukraine and Belgrade, and we've just always had a blast. He is one of the finest expositors that I know, and that is not an exaggeration. Well, plus, he has, I think, the best accent in Acts 29.
That's very kind.
So he's Irish, but he speaks fluent French. I watched this guy teach in both languages one time in Ukraine. And not only that, he's got just a great head of hair that I'm also jealous of. And you're in France where the wine and the cheese and the meat, and I mean, you got a good life, don't you?
Well, it is a very privileged life to be planting churches in Paris.
But we're talking about suffering though, right?
But we're talking about suffering, yeah. There we go.
So I know you're a seasoned planter pastor. You've experienced trials. You've pastored people through trials. I want to talk about that eventually, but why don't you just get us started by giving us a bit of your backstory?
Yes, so I grew up in Northern Ireland near Belfast. My parents were Christians, my big brother was a Christian, and I grew up thinking of France in two ways. One was a holy destination, we went there every summer. And the other way I used to think about France was as a place where they needed more churches. Because every time we used to go to France, we used to try to go to a church every Sunday with my parents. And the fact was that often we'd turn up to church and the church would be closed, or there'd be less than 10 people there, or there'd be no pastor. So it was a wonderful place to go, and yet it was clear that the Christian church in France wasn't doing that well when I was there on holiday. And so those two twin ideas came together. I loved France, I loved French, studied French at university. Taught French for a while in a school in Belfast, near Belfast. And then 9 years into that, with Rachel, my wife, we decided that it was time to take a different direction. And we trained, and then I went to France to start to pastor.
Wow. Now, your wife speaks fluent French, obviously, right? Did she pick up the language quickly?
Yeah, she'd done A-level French, which is a kind of the leaving certificate French in school, but she learned mostly French when she was in France.
Okay. Now you guys have five kids, is that right?
Five kids, that's right, yeah.
Five kids, that's a lot of kids.
It is, same as you.
How are you managing five kids?
Great, I mean, it's a wonderful privilege to have the children we have. My children always make fun of me because my bio online is very sparse. It just states the facts. And they compare my bio with lots of other people's bios and they say they're blessed to have five children. And I never say that, but I am actually blessed to have five children and they're great, from 17 to 6.
That's the Westerners, right? We like to exaggerate and really
exactly.
Hype it up.
Huh? Yeah. Northern Irish people play it really straight.
I like it. I like the straight play. Yeah. Steve says I'm the most, what does he say, the least American he knows.
Oh, well, that's a compliment for
I don't know if that's true or not, but he meant it as a compliment.
I think he did.
Phil, let's talk a little bit about suffering. I heard recently that you taught a class for Crosslands and did an excellent job teaching on this subject, suffering in church planting, suffering in ministry. So first of all, why did you pick this topic to teach on?
Well, actually, I didn't. And so the interesting thing is, and that ties in with nobody decides to suffer, and I didn't decide to teach on suffering, and the two are linked because someone had heard me talk about suffering in the context of some suffering that I had gone through with Rachel. We lost a child at 5 months pregnancy, and so there was a stillbirth, and we ended up burying the child, and all the suffering that went through that coincided with a time in my life when I was also quite busy in terms of doing talks. And so the conjunction of that meant that I was doing a talk in the context of suffering. And so the talk that I did was very heavily influenced by the suffering that I was going through. And so I had to step in to this talk in Crosslands, this training in Crosslands, because somebody else was actually going through a period of suffering and had to pull out. And so the person said, we're doing the dynamics of spiritual growth. And could you revisit that material you did when you went through that suffering and when you talked about suffering? And talk to us about how spiritual growth happens in the context of suffering. So I didn't decide to teach on suffering. I was asked to teach on suffering in the same way that nobody decides to suffer, but everybody suffers. It's actually what all humans do. There's not a single human being on the face of the planet mm-hmm. that doesn't suffer. And that's, I think, why it's important for us as Christians to get our heads around what it is to suffer, what it means to suffer, what it means to be a human being in the midst of suffering, and then how that kind of general suffering links into all the other types of suffering that we might want to talk about later. And so that was the context of it, and that's how it happened.
I don't know if this has been your experience, but I often, in teaching, preaching, talk about kind of the marks of a good preacher. And one of the things I bring up is experience. There's progress in your preaching just in terms of delivery and content, etc., but also the experience of suffering
for sure
actually impacts your preaching, your pastoral ministry.
Yeah.
I feel like when I first started pastoring, I had little real experience with being wounded,
yeah,
even wounding others,
yeah,
seeing a lot of disaster, death, that
yeah.
sort of thing.
Yeah.
And then over time, I just feel like it's made me more tender-hearted. It's made me One of the things I think it's done for me is enabled me to pray at another level for our people corporately. Like, I love to pray on Sunday mornings. Has that been your experience too, when you first started to kind of where you are now?
For sure.
How long have you now been in pastoral ministry or ministry?
So, okay. 12 years. Okay. I'm going into my 13th year soon. So that's the length of time I've been in. And this period of suffering happened about 5 years ago, maybe slightly less. And so... Of course, there's a difference between when you start to suffer and how you understand the world, how you understand yourself, how you understand God, how you understand the Bible. There's not a single Bible book out of the 66 that doesn't mention suffering. So if you think about, Genesis tells us how suffering got into the world. Exodus starts with the suffering of the people of Israel. The rest of the Pentateuch tells us good laws to apply so that people suffer less. Deuteronomy is about the people as they suffer in the desert and as they get into the promised land. The whole of the history books talk about the suffering of the people of Israel, sometimes suffering that they bring in themselves, sometimes persecution that happens. And then you get into the wisdom literature and you've got Job, you've got the Psalms, you've got Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, Song of Solomon. The prophets talk incessantly about suffering, and then you get into the New Testament and every single book talks about suffering. And so in some ways, you can't understand the Bible until you've understood
yeah.
suffering.
The suffering servant himself, right? It's all pointing
to him. It's all getting to the heart of what it is to be human. And then what Jesus had to take on when he was in the incarnation, made like us. He assumed our flesh, he assumed our suffering, and through that redeems us and redeems our suffering. And so you can't understand the Bible without suffering. You can't understand yourself without suffering. You can't understand Jesus Christ without suffering. You can't understand suffering people until you've gone through at least a part of what that suffering means. And so, of course, suffering yourself deepens both your appreciation of and your love for people who suffer. And I noticed that in my heart. And then, of course, when you come through the other end of suffering, we'll get onto this probably, it deepens your appreciation for God's faithfulness in the midst of suffering and what God does for you and to you in suffering. And even suffering is not outside of his sovereign control. And so the prism of suffering and the crucible of suffering in terms of spiritual dynamics and spiritual growth is absolutely necessary, and nothing good that happens to us in a sense happens outside of that context.
So can you walk us through a little bit about your own experience of suffering?
Yeah.
And maybe what was your Bible reading like, just your own personal interior life?
Yeah, yeah.
Can you walk us through that?
Well, I can, because I remember it vividly. I was suffering. We had anticipated this birth. The birth had been interrupted. We didn't expect that. We didn't anticipate that. We didn't want that. We went through all the emotions that are connected with suffering, grief, but also feelings of guilt. Could we have done something differently that would have meant that it wouldn't have happened? All the kind of gamut of emotions that you can think of. And I just remember thinking, okay, well Job's there. And intellectually and theologically, I know that Job's about suffering. And so I said to myself, I would run through the book of Job, or I would read through it, and I would just take my time, and I would just see how God spoke to me through his word in Job at that point in time. And that was a really crucial time for me, because I wasn't reading for information. I wasn't reading to teach. I wasn't reading to preach. I wasn't reading for any other reason than just to, because I needed for my soul to hear what God was saying in that context. And the interesting thing is that the question of Job, the central question that the book asks, isn't why does God permit suffering, but what the devil says to God in Job 1:9, does Job worship God for nothing? And so that's the question, actually, that we all have to answer. Is our worship of God contingent on receiving and perceiving ourselves to receive his blessing? And in the context where that blessing, as we see it, is taken away from us, or we don't have access to it, do we worship God for nothing? Or is that the end of our worship of God? And so that was the first thing, chapters 1 and 2. And we get the curtain lifted in that. And we ask ourselves that question, okay, in the context of suffering. And I'm going to say this, but then I'm going to correct it later on. I knew that my suffering was great, but not as great as some suffering that I could imagine. But that was the question that I was being asked. Do I worship God for nothing? But then as I read through chapters 1 and 2 of Job, and this is what I took from it, and I've never reckoned these as absolute truths about suffering that are always true all the time. But these are things that are at least true of some suffering. First truth is that God permits suffering, but doesn't inflict it or desire it. Job's 1 and 2 shows that God stands behind suffering, but in a different way from the way in which he stands behind blessing. On the other hand, Satan wants suffering and inflicts it as a way of opposing God, opposing his projects, opposing his people. And so you've got this vision of how God manages his word, which is very reassuring in a way. God stands behind blessing and cursing asymmetrically. It's not the same thing. And that meant that the feelings of anger and hatred that I had now a good target. I knew who to hate, and that was Satan. And I knew who not to hate, and that was God, in the context of suffering. So I knew what to do with all those emotions that were going around. So that was one of the things that I began to learn. And then I just read through verse by verse the book of Job. And then I said that I was conscious that my suffering wasn't as bad as some suffering could have been. But then when you get to Job 6, verse 2, Job says, "Oh, that my vexation were weighed. Oh, that my calamity was laid in the balances, for then it would be heavier than the sand of the sea." And you begin to understand that he's saying, "Oh, that it could be, because it can't be." In fact, you can't measure suffering in any precise way. You can't say, "Oh, there's 2 kilos of suffering and there's 3 kilos of suffering." You can't do it. So my suffering is the suffering I'm going through, and other people's suffering is the suffering they're going through. And it's futile to try to compare them. They're just what they are, and you live them before the face of God as honestly and as with as much integrity as you can. And so I would just walk through the book of Job, and every time I read a verse, I would wonder in what way that's directly applicable to me, or in what way that informs me as to how I should suffer well in this context of what I would call normal suffering, the suffering that awaits us all, decay and death and disease. And I was processing it like that. And that was the content, essentially, that I ended up passing on in that teaching opportunity that I had shortly afterwards. And it's what I was trying to bring the students at Crosslands.
So what would you say is unique about suffering in church planting?
Yeah, it's a good question because you shouldn't confuse things. Essentially, when you think about suffering, I think you can distinguish five types of suffering. So I'll run through these and then I'll tell you what kind of suffering I think is particularly connected to church planting. You've got just suffering, which you bring in yourself. So essentially, when you do something stupid, when you do something wrong, and there is a just punishment that you receive because of what you do. So a very banal example, you speed. You get a speeding ticket and you pay the fine. It's suffering because you lose money, but it's just suffering and nobody would complain about that. It seems fair, it seems equitable, it seems proportional. And so that's fine. Unjust suffering is the kind of suffering I think that is involved when, for example, in a child abuse situation, the child has done nothing and yet suffers. The child has not acted at all. There's a victim, there's a perpetrator. And it's unjust and it makes us angry and it should make us angry. There's the normal suffering that I've just talked about, which is the suffering that we all have in a fallen world, decay and disease and death, that makes it no less horrible, but it's just nobody's very surprised if it happens to you. There's abnormal suffering, which happens, for example, in the famous earthquake in Lisbon, which makes people think, can there be a good God who is supervising everything that happens in the world, given the fact that so many people died in such a cataclysmic event, or the tsunami, or the earthquake in Haiti, or whatever you might want to choose as an abnormally shocking event. And then the fifth type is suffering for righteousness. And that's the kind of suffering we're talking about when we're talking about church planting suffering, by and large. It's the kind of suffering that describes absolutely the kind of suffering that Jesus went through. So Jesus, because of his righteousness, because he stands against the culture, because he preaches against sin and for righteousness, suffers unjustly, but for righteousness. And the kind of suffering we're talking about when we're talking about suffering in church planting is that kind of suffering. Now, I'm not saying that Satan can't ask permission of God to make church planters suffer in normal ways, decay, disease, and death, because he wants to get against God's projects, absolutely. But the kind of suffering we're talking about in church planting suffering is mostly that kind of suffering for righteousness' sake, in my opinion. And so when Jesus comes to Paul on the Damascus Road, he says to Ananias after he's struck him blind, I'm sending you to Paul because I want you to tell him how he must suffer for my name. And so suffering for my name is what Paul does. Paul wouldn't suffer if he wasn't preaching the gospel, if he wasn't telling people that Jesus is the only way, if he wasn't telling people that there was sin and judgment and there was a solution, if he wasn't telling Jews that the way to salvation was not through the law, not through the circumcision rites, but through faith and faith alone, he wouldn't be suffering unless he was preaching the gospel. And so suffering in church planting comes through faithful preaching of the gospel and faithfulness to Jesus Christ. And that's what we're talking about.
Those are very helpful categories: just suffering, unjust suffering, normal suffering, abnormal suffering, and suffering for righteousness.
That's right.
Yeah. Super. So let's talk a little bit about preaching and singing, maybe praying. What role do these activities play in helping lead people who are suffering now? Yeah. So shepherding.
So we've already talked about how the Bible is a book of suffering. So it tells us why suffering comes into the world, how suffering will be resolved in the world, and how it feels to suffer as we walk through this veil of tears. Samuel Beckett, an Irish playwright, said that we're born astride a grave. Born astride a grave. That's just what it is like to be human. And so unless we address suffering in our sermons, we're not addressing the human condition. And if we're not addressing the human condition, then we're talking past the people we're listening to. So we've got to talk about suffering regularly in our preaching. And as I say, the Bible offers us many, many opportunities to do that. Every book, as we were saying, has suffering, at least in part, as one of its themes or sub-themes. And so be attentive to that as we preach and teach. If we're not attentive to that, we're missing an opportunity to cross a bridge to people to where they are. We're missing an opportunity to say to them, we don't worship a God who is immune to suffering, but who, in the person of Jesus Christ, in the God-man, made it possible for him to experience suffering from the inside, to die and to rise again, and therefore to defeat suffering and to offer us, as Revelation says, a new world in which there is no suffering, where every tear is wiped away. And so the sweep of the Bible story and the individual parts of the Bible story invite us to address suffering regularly and compassionately.
Yeah, and redemptively too, right? Because
sure.
I think some people in preaching identify that people are suffering, but their solution is wrong, or at least it's inadequate. It doesn't take them to new creation.
For
it
sure.
doesn't take them to the gospel.
And it takes them also, and this is very typical of our day and age, and something that Tim Keller talks about in his book on Walking with God Through Pain and Suffering, which is an excellent resource for people who are listening. He says that our Western age, our technological age, offers techniques and technologies to cure suffering. And so instead of saying, why are you suffering? Because the world has fallen, because I'm a sinner, because other people are sinners. What are the things that I can do to fix suffering or the symptoms of suffering? How can I engineer a technology or a technique that will get me through suffering? And their solution at the end is a better society that will eliminate suffering, as if that were possible. But it's not. But people, through self-help books and through all kinds of different technologies and techniques, want to eliminate suffering or go against suffering. But it's futile. The person who's most likely to buy a self-help book is someone who's just bought one, because they don't work. And yet, we're always trying to cure our self-sickness in that way. And as you say, the Bible story tells us why we really suffer and what kind of hope we can really have in the midst of suffering. And churches and church plants need to come back incessantly on that thing.
Yeah. And so even an aspiring planter needs to get a good theology of suffering down, right?
Well, if he doesn't, I mean, take Philippians. It's all about suffering. It's all about joy, but it's all about suffering too in every chapter. Take 2 Timothy. It's all about suffering. Take 2 Corinthians in particular. It's all about suffering. And all of those are Paul as a church planter talking to church plants about walking with him and planting more churches. And Paul's incessant theme is suffering for the gospel. And so church plants are a way of suffering for the gospel, but as we draw people into church planting teams, we're drawing them in to suffering for the gospel. And so it's got to be honest and pastoral to say to people up front, suffer. When I was about to come to France, I told you that I used to be a teacher, and then I came to France. A good friend of mine was in Dublin. He was already in France, ministering in France. And we were going for a walk. He's a kind of an intense guy, and he can't do 2 things at once. So if he's got something to say, he has to stop walking and say it. And so this guy stopped walking and I had to stop with him. And he looked at me and said, Philip, unless you're prepared to suffer, please don't come to France. Mm. We've got enough people in France pretending. Mm. But if you're not prepared to suffer, don't come to France and just join the happy club of people who are doing ministry in France. It really struck me. It made me ask the question, am I prepared as I come to France to suffer for the gospel? To suffer for faithfulness, to suffer for the exclusive claims of Christianity, to walk my family through a certain amount of suffering too, because as we plant churches, our families are drawn into certain kinds of isolation, certain kinds of suffering. Are we prepared for that?
So good. What's the role of singing?
This is something that really struck me as I was preparing for Crosslands, and I kind of got really interested in this topic, and it's probably going to change how we sing in the church where I'm currently pastor. 42 of the Psalms are individual laments. 16 of the Psalms are collective laments. Over a third of the Psalter is lament. And yet how many times in our sung worship are we singing that kind of stuff? And why would you sing that kind of stuff? What is the benefit? There's a Scottish I think he was a pastor, but I'm not totally sure about that, called Andrew Fletcher. He says, I don't care who writes the laws of a country, so long as I get to write the songs. Mm. And the point is that singing songs deeply influences your culture and your beliefs. And so as you sing, at the very least, you're teaching people what is true. And so if we're not singing about suffering, we're not preparing people by our song worship to suffer well. We're not allowing them during sung worship to enter into that space where they sing to God their pain and their suffering, and where they hope in God, the God who is their good shepherd, to walk with them through the valley of the shadow of death. We're not inviting them into that space in a corporate way. And so the convictions that I'm beginning to have about sung worship are, if we're not at least representing to some extent that ratio that I've just explained, a third of the Psalter is lament, if we're not offering people the chance to sing lament on a Sunday, we're not offering them a full experience of what it means to walk with God as a human being before the new creation. And so we're depriving them of that chance to be honest, to be vulnerable, to be authentic. And then we're depriving ourselves as pastors of chances to say, for example, after singing a lament or singing something that talks about suffering, we've just sung this song, if you're suffering, and I know that some of you are, please don't hesitate to come seek prayer after this, to walk through this with us in the context of the community of God. And so I'm more and more convinced that singing our suffering must be an important way that we relate to God corporately and that we teach our people to anticipate or to walk through suffering in a minute.
How do you see your pastoral counseling of suffering people feed into your pastoral leadership and preaching?
Well, I've always thought that the way in which I learn about sin, the way I learn about triumph over sin, repentance, the way I learn about joy, is mostly watching myself and my family live real life. And the same is true of other people around me. And so it's when I watch people suffer or overcome suffering that I learn something essential in how I communicate that on a Sunday. One example would be Pascal, who's a fellow who became a Christian. And the reason he became a Christian was because he was suffering the pain of seeing his own impatience with his son. And so through walking with him through that suffering, he was frustrated, he was disappointed, he was dismayed that this relationship wasn't going the way he wanted it to. He wanted me to fix that. I said, I can't fix that. The only thing I can do is point people to the gospel of God's patience with us. But you don't believe the gospel, so I can't help you. Because the only way I know to is to look at the God who's patient with me. And through his experience of frustration and suffering in impatience with his son, he began a journey that ended up in him believing the gospel and being transformed by the gospel in that relationship. So those are the kinds of things that I think that you become sensitive to the longer you go on in ministry.
So last question. For people who haven't suffered yet, people in general, Christians in general, church planters in particular, how do they prepare themselves to suffer well? You've mentioned a couple of resources. You've given us a lot to think about, really good biblical theology. Any additional things you would say to them?
Yeah, I would say, so if you haven't suffered, and I don't believe that there is a person out there who hasn't suffered yet. Perhaps there's extensive sufferings that you haven't gone through or experiences that you haven't yet gone through. But if you're an aspiring church planter or a church planter, and you haven't yet gone through significant suffering because of righteousness, what we're talking about, because of church planting, I would invite you to read Philippians, read 2 Corinthians, read 2 Timothy, and ask yourself 5 questions. Ask yourself why Paul suffered. So, and you'll see that time and time and time again, it's because of the gospel. It's because of faithfulness to Jesus. It's not because he's being a busybody. It's not because he's being rude or arrogant. It's because he's being faithful to the gospel. And so the kinds of suffering that you want to avoid are the kinds of suffering you bring in yourselves because essentially you're living an unwise or a sinful life. Often as Christians, we can fall into the trap of justifying our suffering and saying, I'm suffering for the gospel, when in fact we're not suffering for the gospel at all. We're suffering because we've done things that we shouldn't have done and we've invested in situations we shouldn't have invested in. And that's not the kind of suffering we're talking about. And so don't expect gospel pity for that kind of suffering. That's not the kind of thing we're talking about. So why did Paul suffer? The second question is, in what ways did he suffer? And so as you look through those different passages, you'll find that every type of suffering is on the pages of those three books that I've talked about. So physical suffering, material suffering, being in want, being rejected, being isolated, being betrayed, feeling lonely, feeling far from God, feeling as if God wasn't answering his prayers. Take this thorn away from me. No. And then just remind yourself that in all the ways in which Paul suffered are ways in which potentially you could suffer as a gospel minister. And are you prepared for that? Then the third question is, how did Paul's suffering benefit those to whom he ministered? Particularly in Philippians, Paul's being in prison emboldened the people who watched him suffer well in prison. And so to the extent that you suffer well in the context of your ministry, you will embolden the people who watch you suffer well. And that's priceless for your congregations. Fourth question, In what ways were his sufferings in ministry occasions for spiritual growth for Paul himself? So particularly at the end of 2 Corinthians, Paul says, I will boast in my weakness, for when I am weak, then I am strong. Paul, through suffering, grew in his understanding of what it meant to be a minister of the gospel. And as we suffer, we will also learn that. And then the fifth question I would invite people to ask in that context, what resources were available to Paul to help him process and endure his suffering? And then we'll get right down to things like the gospel, the Spirit, prayer, the community of God's people, international partnerships that meant that he could call on people from all around the world to pray for him, to visit him, to bring him things, to rally around him in his suffering, particularly at the end of 2 Timothy. And so if you ask those five questions, then at least you'll have categories as you go into the next phase of ministry and as God might permit suffering in your life. And you'll be able to suffer like Paul for the gospel.
Excellent, brother. Excellent. This is some of the best stuff on suffering I've heard. I can see why they ask you to talk about it. I don't know if they knew that you knew this much about it. You know, sometimes we surprise ourselves, don't we?
I guess.
thank you so much, brother. Hey, so if the listeners want to keep up with you, where can they track you on social media?
Well, if they're good French speakers, then they're very welcome to visit the site of the Église du Val-d'Europe. But if you don't speak French, they might just have to...
pray for the gift of tongues.
Or whatever.
Yeah,
do that. Yeah.
But you have some stuff online in English
as
well.
Yeah, I'm sure they can Google that.
Yeah. Excellent. Thanks for taking time to be on the podcast, brother.